You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Storytelling with the Moth Radio Hour. On today's edition, a divorced woman does a complete makeover on her lifestyle. An Air Force veteran describes what it's like to be a member of the Honor Guard. And a computer hacker messes with the algorithms of OkCupid. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
Right now, local and state officials yesterday agreed that Wisconsin needs to urgently replace its lead service pipes. They're hoping to prevent a serious public health crisis like the lead contamination scandal in Flint, Michigan.
Recent tests show that a high percentage of children in Milwaukee have been exposed to unhealthy levels of lead. But the problem isn't limited to Wisconsin's largest city, says Department of Natural Resources Secretary Kathy Stepp.
I hear from people who live in Ashland who are suffering from these same challenges. There's Beloit, there's Kenosha, there's Janesville, there's Racine.
Dee Hall is with us now. She's managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Dee, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
So the issue of lead in pipes in Wisconsin, around the country, it's not new. But here in the state, what prompted local and state officials to decide this is urgent and it needs to be handled soon?
Well, first of all, Flint, Michigan was a main impetus. You know, the notion that lead is not good for you and that lead pipes are not safe. It's actually been around for a while. Some would argue for centuries. But it wasn't until the Flint crisis, I think, that it really brought home the danger of these lead pipes, because that's where the lead in water comes from. It does not come from a water source, generally speaking. It comes from the pipes that lead to homes and businesses.
And do you know how the lead pipe issue in Wisconsin, maybe zeroing in here in Milwaukee, how that compares to the problem that they had in Flint, Michigan?
Well, in Flint, the problem was they switched water sources from a Detroit water system source to the Flint River, and they failed, for whatever reason, it's still unclear why, to add something called corrosion control. And so when that highly corrosive water coursed through the system, it forced all kinds of lead to flake off the pipes and into the homes of people. And so what they saw was a doubling of the incidence of lead poisoning among children in the city.
So what about incidence of lead poisoning in the city of Milwaukee versus the city of Flint?
Well, right now, about 8.4, I believe it is, percent of children who are tested in the city of Milwaukee are diagnosed with lead poisoning. The issue, however, is that water is not tested as a routine part of an investigation when a child is lead poisoned. So the home, if a child has a high enough level, the state and the local county health department come in and they look at the child's environment. But water they're not required to look at water, and most of the times they don't. They look at lead paint, for example. That is considered the largest culprit.
So why has this been an issue that until now, until the consciousness kind of raising around lead pipes of Flint, Michigan, how is this flowing under the radar until now?
Well, I think it's the classic, lots of things are problems out there, and it focuses the public's attention by having a disaster like Flint. What I will say about lead is it's like several other pollutants and things that you can't smell, you can't taste it, most people don't know if they have lead pipes or not. The stuff's underground. It's very difficult to know just by drinking your water that you have a problem.
And so there was this event in Milwaukee yesterday, the Marquette University Symposium with DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett saying that it's time to make an effort to remove these lead pipes. Do we know how soon or how solid this plan is?
A plan would be too strong of a word. I think there's a desire on the part of the state and the city to remove the lead service lines. There's a big problem, though, like a logistical problem. There's a financial problem. One of the biggest problems that they typically run into in these kind of projects is the homeowner owns half of the pipe, and the city or municipality or the utility owns the other half, and it's very difficult to coordinate a project like that. Replacing it costs thousands of dollars. in the state of Wisconsin, I'm understanding, based on the symposium yesterday, that the utility is not allowed to take the private portion and pass the cost of replacing that along to all of the ratepayers. So it's a complicated, it's sort of a property ownership problem and issue. It's also a funding issue. Milwaukee has, done some preliminary estimates that it'll be $511 to $756 million to replace their 70,000 lead service lines.
And I imagine doing something like that in the city of Milwaukee alone, let alone the state of Wisconsin, that's an enterprise that's not going to be over in a year or two.
No, it'll take a long time. I mean, everyone pretty well acknowledges that. In the meantime, people can protect themselves using things like filters on their faucets. They can flush their water before they use it. Those are proven methods to remove some of the lead. But so long as the lead pipes remain there, the chance that you can, or members or your family can, ingest lead is just always there. So, for example, Mark Edwards, who was the man who led the testing in Flint and was sort of the spearheaded, uncovering what was going on in that city, he basically said nobody should ethically ever be told that their water is safe so long as it's being delivered by a lead pipe.
Are people being told that now?
No, they're not. No, the messaging is very interesting because the mayor, Mayor Barrett, yesterday stated that the water is safe according to everyone he's talked to. But then when he asked about is it safe for infants, he was told by his public health officials not really. So, I mean, that's a pretty alarming thing. I think the public utilities are trying to not overly alarm people, but people like Edwards believe that they need to simply be more forceful and be more honest with people and saying, so long as you have these lead pipes leading to your home, you've got a problem.
We're talking with Dee Hall right now, managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, talking about calls yesterday with Mayor Tom Barrett, DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, calls to replace all of Wisconsin's lead water service lines to reduce the incidence of lead poisoning that have been shown to be especially high in parts of the state like Milwaukee. And Dee, you mentioned earlier that water filters came up yesterday and were said to be effective at making the drinking water safe, reducing those lead levels. But it sounds like those filters cost $30. And I imagine for some families, $30 is a lot of money.
And I think $30 is a part of the problem. But another part of the problem is if it's not maintained, if the filter stops working, you may not even know that. So, individuals would be essentially left responsible for their own water quality, even though they're hooked up to a city system. And that gets to be a real problem because when you get water from a city system, you are assured and assume that it is safe. And yet there are many things that could go wrong with a filter. Some of them have cartridges that have to be replaced. So it's not a permanent solution. It's a stopgap measure that works well, that is effective. But so long as you have those lead pipes in there, that danger of it releasing lead into your water is just there.
The Environmental Protection Agency has set 15 parts per billion as the level at which action should be taken to ameliorate that. So do we know what the range is in places like Milwaukee?
So what the federal lead and copper rule requires is that they sample, that the city utility sample a certain number of homes every, in this case now, every third year. So of all the homes in Milwaukee, there are 50 locations that are tested every third year. And that's in a city with hundreds of thousands of people and 70,000 lead service lines. So you can imagine that they're probably not fully capturing the full extent of whatever problem there might be. And then Mark Edwards made some pretty provocative statements yesterday during the symposium saying that he hates to even bring this up, but he believes testing is almost worthless.
Why does he say that?
It was pretty shocking because lead doesn't have a regular scheduled predictable release. A piece of lead can become dislodged and create very, very high levels in the water at any moment. For example, I looked at the study that Milwaukee did when it replaced its water service or its water mains, and during that work, they had to disconnect the the existing pipe going to the home. And that disruption of the lead pipe can send lots of lead into the home. So they did a series of testing, but in some cases they would do 12 sequential tests, the same tap, one right after the other. One would come up two parts per billion, the next one 199 parts per billion. So he just said it's just too unpredictable, these random tests where you show up and you take a little bit of water every third year is simply never going to tell you. In fact, he called the entire regulatory scheme around lead and copper in the a sick joke on the U.S. population.
So it sounds like, at least according to this expert and maybe some of the data you're talking about, that the only real fix is replacing the pipes.
That's kind of what the conclusion was of some of the top folks there yesterday. I know that, you know, Kathy Stepp said if it costs a lot of money, then it costs a lot of money, which I was really surprised to hear, because obviously we have a fiscally conservative administration, which is not really looking to spend more money on government services. But she made it very clear that she felt that government, this is a role for government to play, is ensuring public health and safety.
We're talking right now about calls to replace all of Wisconsin's lead water service lines to reduce the incidence of lead poisoning that's been shown to be especially high in areas of the state like Milwaukee. And Dee Hall is joining us now. She's managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. A link to her article on this issue is up right now on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have lead service lines coming into your house or community? Have you recently had them replaced? Do you think current legislation is enough to protect residents from a situation like the one in Flint, Michigan that's gotten so much attention? What would you like to see city, state, local officials do about it? What are you doing about it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our discussion about lead water pipes in the state and calls to remove them as soon as possible.
What do you think? What would you like to see state and local officials do about the possibility of lead contamination in drinking water? Who should pay for it? Is this a problem you've dealt with in your community, in your home? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Dee Hall stays with us. She's managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We'll take a first call now. Jake is joining us in Madison. Jake, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question for your guest is, I read when the Flint crisis was going on that the return on investment for replacing lead pipes was something like $7 or $14 on the dollar. So while it's a big cost to make the change, it's definitely worth it in like public health savings and then the education gains and when you're not limiting the intelligence of the children in the community. So I was wondering what the guest comment is on that.
Jay, great points. Thank you. Dee?
Yeah, I think that is a good point because the State Department of Health Services puts out an annual report on the percentage and number of children who are lead poisoned and where they are. And they emphasize in every report that that this lead poisoning costs the state billions of dollars with a B every year because children are lead poisoned, because studies have shown that children who are lead poisoned are much more likely to commit crimes later. They have problems in school. And these changes and problems are permanent and lifelong. And so the notion that there's a sort of an acceptable level or that somehow this isn't worth the time or the money, I think the state and top leaders in the state are now coming to the conclusion that this may be worth the investment. The question is going to be who exactly pays and how much will it be?
And on that question, what are the theories on the table?
Well, the city of Madison is one of the few municipalities in the entire nation that did this. They did it. They finished it over a 10-year period. And what the city did was the city paid for its portion and then it offered a discount or rebate to some extent to the homeowners and then allowed them to pay back their portion over time. So that's how they did it. You can imagine that's kind of a cumbersome system. And when you're talking about people with very little money, which you might find in inner city Milwaukee, for example, that was one of the issues that the mayor raised is, you know, I'm not sure we're going to get absentee landlords and very, very low-income people able to cough up $3,000 or $5,000 to solve this problem.
Well, Jake, thank you so much for the question. And time for a brief question here from Paul in Wausau. Paul, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask?
I really have a question. I was just calling in to say that I appreciate the program.
Thank you.
I'm calling from Wausau, but my first home was in Milwaukee. And I think your guest would verify this, that most pre-war homes in Milwaukee have a lead service pipe. I know I was advised when I bought it from the realtor that it could be an issue and that they were responsible for it, for, I guess, half of it.
Okay. Paul, thank you for that.
Right, yes, it's definitely, of the 176,000 estimated lead service lines, about 40% of them are in Milwaukee, and of course they are concentrated in homes that were built before 1950.
So as you said right now, saying that there is a plan in place that's too strong, but there is a political will to have a plan, I guess, at this point, and some momentum behind it. What do you expect to happen next, Dee?
Well, I did talk with Senator Lena Taylor during a break. She had attended the forum, and she felt that something is going to happen, that people are finally waking up to the problem and taking it seriously. She was frustrated. She felt like the folks yesterday didn't go far enough, but I think she is feeling like this is an issue that is can't be ignored.
And so in terms of getting Milwaukee with the lead pipes replaced, that's part of it. The rest of the state, what do you expect there?
Well, this DNR has made a start. They allocated $14.5 million worth of grants to 38 communities around the state, including I think it was $2.6 million to Milwaukee for the express purpose of digging up not just the utilities line, but also paying for the replacement of the homeowners line. So there were some hints yesterday from Kathy Stepp that they will want to possibly look to expand that program, possibly look to provide filters in the meantime. There is no plan right now, but there are some possible changes that will be coming down the road.
Well, Dee, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this issue today.
All right. Thank you.
That was Dee Hall, managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. And she joined us today to talk about a new call from Mayor Tom Barrett and DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp to go forward crafting some kind of plan and initiative to replace lead pipes in Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin as a whole.
There's been a major change in the whooping crane experiment here in Wisconsin this year. Humans wearing crane costumes are no longer teaching young birds to fly behind ultralight aircraft. Instead, crane chicks mostly now are being raised by adult cranes in hopes that the chicks will, years from now, become better at successfully reproducing in the wild. Chuck Kornbach reports.
By one key measurement, number of adult birds, the 15-year public-private effort to create a migrating flock of whooping cranes in the eastern U.S. has been a success. This time of year, if you're near the right marsh, you can hear the cranes make a call like this. Each summer, about 100 of the federally endangered whoopers live in the upper Midwest, mostly Wisconsin, before migrating in the fall to the southeastern U.S., mostly Florida. Some mature cranes have paired off and produced young, mainly at the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. But many wild hatched chicks have not survived more than a few weeks or months, scientists say, mainly due to predators or habitat. 22 of 23 chicks hatched this year have died. Last winter, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided that bird reproduction and rearing might eventually improve if chicks hatched in captivity spent more of their first summer with captive adult cranes and much less time with costumed humans. That change has taken place this year with 9 chicks at a federal wildlife center in Maryland and with 3 youngsters at the International Crane Foundation near Baraboo. A recorder whirs in the conference room at the foundation offices, capturing a video feed from what's called Crane City, a secure breeding facility about a half mile away. The wall monitor shows 2 big white whoopers and a cinnamon-colored chick gently walking around and occasionally eating. Curator of birds, Kim Boardman, says she's learned a lot from watching this temporary crane family.
You learn those really subtle behaviors that how parents interact with chicks and how they get them to eat that piece of food that they really don't want to eat.
Chick rearing supervisor Marianne Wellington says she's noticed when the young start to wander a bit.
How much they stay really close to their parents, and then as the chick gets older and can forage more on its own, it's more like a toddler, you know, investigating the world and seeing what they can do on their own, but they're always connecting with their parent, you know, talking to them.
Later this month, the three chicks at the Crane Foundation will be put in crates and taken to cranes living in the wild. The chicks in Maryland will be flown to Wisconsin. Joe Duff of Operation Migration opens the door of the crane pen at the White River Marsh State Wildlife Area and shows where the chicks will live for a few days to get accustomed to the change in location. Duff says soon the birds will be let out and connected with adults across central Wisconsin.
That will give them opportunity to build their wings up because they've been in captivity all summer, and so they need to experiment with flying a little bit and get their wings going and their strength built up and get accustomed to the ways of the wild and spend some time with their adoptive parents.
Duff is one of the former ultralight pilots who led young cranes on past migrations. He says he's on board with a new technique to try to improve breeding. But the various people involved in the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership acknowledge they're not sure how the fall migration will go and won't know for 4 or 5 years when the chicks mature if breeding will improve. Even a key architect of the change, Pete Fassbender of the Fish and Wildlife Service, admits to uncertainty.
We just know that the chicks released in the last 15 years, there was something missing in their behavior.
The success of the change in the Whooping Crane project could put the reintroduction effort on a path to finally building better reproduction of the endangered birds. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the major party presidential candidates answered questions on national security issues this week. It generated a lot of headlines. We'll take a look at some of the big security challenges facing the next president.
A guest makes a case that we should stop paying so much attention to political polls.
And on this week's edition of Food Friday, as a frugal person, I'm looking forward to this. Our guest shares recipes that help us use up all the stuff in our fridges. It's going to help us cut down, I guess, on food waste. I hate wasting food, but sometimes it just ends up in the compost.
Sometimes, which is a good place for it to go, but it'd be great to clean out the fridge and use all those late summer veggies.
That's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.